You're listening to episode 4058 of Grow Great, the podcast. Greetings from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Grow Great, the podcast. As always, find the show notes, other useful resources, and ways to connect with me at the website growgreat.com. The best decision-making tool on the planet is not a computer, but I will tell you what it is next. I've now spent over 40 years in the business world. Small business owners are my people. And some operate companies that do, under $5 million. Others are at the helm of companies that generate well over $100 million a year. And every single one of them have paid some price or prices to be where they are, because we all do. As we have grown older in our business careers, we have often discovered that we were paying a price that, well, we didn't think we were paying that price. I was 27 years old. I was at the helm of a $14 million retailing company. I had a wife. I had two small children. I knew the price that I was paying at the time. I was forfeiting a lot of dinners, more than I could count. Canceled plans, tardy appointments to social gatherings, 80-hour work weeks. I mean, those were the prices that I knew about. Those were the prices that I basically signed up for. Older business people, when I was in my 20s, would often tell me, kid, the stress will kill you. Stress will kill you. And I was young, and I would just chuckle at these people, sometimes to their face, mostly under my breath, because it was that stress that for me gave me the adrenaline rush. I remember telling people commonly, I'm a stress junkie. And honestly, I am, because it fueled me. I loved the nonstop action of retailing and the blistering pace. And it was that taming the chaos was really the juice of it all. And I was pretty good at it. It was a price I was paying. Well, one day, while still in my mid to late 20s, I had an acquaintance. He worked for a supplier, and he finds himself in the hospital suffering chest pains, just a few years older than me. And like me, he was running hard. He was running fast. And I'm thinking, when I got the phone call that he had been hospitalized, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I mean, we both assumed that he'd had a heart attack. Well, the doctor sent him home to rest and to stay away from work for a week, and gave him some sort of diet to start and some moderate exercise regimen to undertake. That was after spending one night and nearly two full days in the hospital, scared out of his mind. We were all paying a price. We were all paying a price for our pursuit. Well, time rolled on and we all grew older, along with our kids. And it wasn't long before you would begin to hear stories of a marriage breaking up, a divorce here and a divorce there popped up, and then more divorces would pop up. And then by the time the kids were hitting their teen years and some in their college years, well, countless stories of kids abusing drugs, that entered the fray, followed by countless stories of kids who were sent to rehab, some sent to rehab multiple times, and then every now and again, we would be stunned with the news of someone who had taken their own life. I mean, the price we were paying was far higher than any of us imagined. And it wasn't merely a few missed dinner dates. It wasn't just a few missed ball games. It wasn't just a few school plays that our seat was vacant. No, it was wrecking our marriages. It was destroying our kids. It was breaking our families. It was costing some of us our very lives. And that was in the 1980s. And things have only grown worse because the pace has picked up steam, and it's picked up intensity as well, along with competition, Owning a small business has always been tough, doable, and in many respects crazy rewarding, but a really high price. Lonely, isolating, some days filled with anxiety, some days filled with dread, some days even filled with fear, and mostly days not knowing any other way to operate, right? We operated the way we operated because, well, it's all we knew. We did what we had to do because it was all we knew at the time. You got to go it alone. Nobody wants to hear your problems. I mean, you sure don't want to share your opportunities with anybody. And so it's all piling up on your desk. It's all piling up in your head. It's all piling up in your life. Well, America grew increasingly interested about this time in physical health. Jogging and biking began to be the rage. Gyms like LA Fitness and 24 Hour Fitness and Gold's Gym, they started popping up in neighborhoods. We got health conscious, and that was good. But nobody was paying attention to the mental health of the small business owner. I mean, not that we would have listened, right? Messages and timing, they're really important. Sometimes people come on the scene and they preach a message that's a really great, valid message, but people just, they're not receptive. Thankfully, today is a new day, a better day, one where we can leverage technology, one where we can leverage relationships. I want you to look at your LinkedIn profile. Take a moment sometime and go look at your LinkedIn profile, and I want you to count how many connections you have with people that you have never met face-to-face, and you may never meet them face-to-face. I remember when LinkedIn came on the scene and some people were quite pompous and arrogant about it. I remember reaching out to a couple of people wanting to connect, and I never do just click the connect button. I always type something. You know, there's a reason why I'm wanting to reach out to somebody. It's apparent to me based on their blog or content they produce, or maybe even a book that they've written or an interview that I've heard them give, that I've got something in common with them. And I remember years and years ago reaching out to some woman to connect because I had seen her work or something. And I got back a very curt reply. You know, have we ever met? Do I know you? I don't connect with people that I haven't met. And I thought, well, here's somebody that doesn't get it. But we have migrated from that to now. It's very common for people at LinkedIn, even the most pompous and arrogant people at LinkedIn, will connect with people that they have not met personally. It's the world we live in. Never before have we been surrounded. Never before have we been so connected with so many people. And yet we still remain ridiculously isolated. We still remain ridiculously lonely with our own stuff. Dump it on your family. Well, that's hardly fair. And it really isn't going to help much, right? To burden your family with all the business stuff. I mean, besides, they really can't relate. Not likely. Well, dump on your friends. That's no better. Certainly isn't any better for them. Probably isn't any better for you either. Well, dump it on your employees. Well, that's not even an option. That doesn't even cross our mind, and it shouldn't, because that just makes matters worse. Our problems are not their problems. We're there to help remove their problems, not to add to that. And now you know why I hit the record button today, because mental health of small business owners has been a lifelong interest of mine since I was much, much younger, but one that I really didn't know how to make a contribution toward until a few years ago. And I began to look at community. And as I look carefully at my natural abilities coupled with my personality, I would read and I would write, I would podcast, and I would talk with people, and I would often quiz people about their experiences as small business owners. And what I found wasn't surprising. In fact, it was almost universal, except for the most pompous, who just simply would be people who would refuse to ever admit any vulnerability. The rest of us were yearning for community. Some safe environment, some safe haven, where we could get some solid feedback and other perspectives as we would navigate our own problems and as we would kind of vet our opportunities. We wanted to connect with other small business owners, but none of us quite knew how to go about that. Because, well, if we were to do it, we would involve people that we already knew. And so that kind of had its own baggage. And so how does one do this? How do you find a group? How do you even create a group? People that we already had relationships, that just won't work. It was time to look at the problem in a new way. Now, you likely enjoy various tools. Now, I'm not talking about drills or saws. Well, maybe you do enjoy that. I'm a guy that doesn't necessarily enjoy wrenches or screwdrivers, but technology tools like Evernote, technology tools like Slack and Skype and Basecamp and Zoom.us, these are the tools. These are the tools that fuel our businesses in many cases. And some of us are very smitten by what the latest, greatest tool is, and others of us are more utilitarian about it. We love software and we love apps. In fact, I just looked at my iTunes app storage, and I need to pull it up here. I have 251 apps that I have downloaded. 251. Now, thankfully, not all of those are on my phone, but at some point, they all have been. Now, not at the same time. And right now, at this very moment, as I hit record, I have almost 70 apps on my phone. And these apps are tools. They range from things like Snapchat to Waze to Instagram and Facebook to Shazam and Dropbox. I mean, some of them I use very often. Others I don't hardly use ever. It's nice to have so many tools at our fingertips. And we've never had so much computing power in our life. I mean, the computing power that we have on these little devices is ridiculously powerful. And we love it. And we spend our lives here. In fact, we can do our business here. Small business owners are tasked with doing, mostly with doing one thing. And that one thing that we are tasked with doing is solving problems. Solving problems, making decisions. And because ownership has its privilege, it also has its burden of responsibility. And that burden of responsibility is we are able to make decisions that can be very risk-reward concentric. That is, we can make a decision that can have a big impact on the company, both negatively and positively. And sometimes solving the problem means finding the best opportunities, and sometimes it means hiring the best person for the job. It might be finding the most ideal location for a new store. Maybe it's repairing a broken culture that just seems to be killing our productivity and creating way too much turnover in our workforce. Problems, opportunities, they run the range, and it's all the same. It's figuring out what best course of action to take based on the data at hand. Well, there's a problem, the data at hand. Business owners rarely get to make a decision with complete full knowledge. The data at hand always seems to be insufficient. I mean, we have to work with confidence knowing that, okay, we feel like maybe we've got about 70% of the information. And we don't likely have time to allow the other 30% to come on board. We just have to make a decision because time will not wait for an owner to get 100% of the information. It's how we live our lives. What's your current decision-making tool? It's probably not a tool as much as it is a process. Well, what does that process look like for you? Let me describe mine, at least the one that I have used for over 30 years. And I'm not going to bore you with the details. We're just going to take kind of a real high level look at this just to give you some context for this conversation. First of all, I'm going to gather all the real evidence. I'm going to gather the data, the numbers. It may be sales. It may be a price. It may be units. It may be years. It's likely got many numbers attached to it, not just one. And we can use a lease as an example. Most owners have negotiated leases. Most of us have negotiated real estate deals. or at least we've been the final say in those things. Well, there are terms and conditions that include how many months or how many years or how much the rent is, what's included in the rent, what's not included in the rent, the common area maintenance costs, the taxes, other costs that are associated with that lease, the ones that you're responsible for, and the very few in this day and age, the very few that your landlord may be responsible for. There are all kinds of numbers and there are all kinds of conditions. Now, it's important to have them in writing so that everybody's got a clear understanding of, well, what's at stake here? And part of this evidence gathering is to hire or have a real estate attorney who is an expert. I'm not an expert at these things, even though I've been involved in a number of those things over the course of my life. In every case, I'm going to find a commercial real estate leasing expert. And unless you, as an owner, unless you are that expert, we're going to rely on somebody else to help us navigate the legal jargon that otherwise could really trip us up. Now, again, this is all part of getting the known facts as secure as we can so that we know what we're dealing with. It's always my step one. I want to know what's real before I start entertaining what might be possible or what even might be probable as you begin the negotiation. Secondly, I'm going to involve my team if they're not already involved. There are going to be some key people, most notably a CFO, an accountant, that are going to need to be involved in this process. And we're going to meet and we're going to discuss the pros and the cons of this deal. And I'm going to encourage the team members to debate this openly. I'm going to encourage, my personal preference is to encourage some kind of vigorous debate. I prefer every position be challenged. If somebody's in favor, it'd kind of be nice if somebody was opposed, right? So we could get some debate going back and forth, not just to create conflict, but to properly vet this idea. And then I might encourage them to switch sides and continue the debate. Now, I'm going to tell you straight up, this is almost always impossible because people want to behave the way they think you want them to behave. And it's not as I really want it to be, but it's just how it is. That's understandable. They've got jobs to protect. Well, at this point, I've involved this expert, so I've got the real estate attorney. I've involved my team to whatever degree that I have. And these are the people that I rely on for input. These are the people that I rely on for advice, and I value the perspective. Rarely do I get much of a contrary position, though. And I'm never going to be tested except perhaps by the attorney. Well, the third thing is I'm going to use these human resources to form a strategy for the next step. These people will have, hopefully, they will have given me some suggestions. They will have given me some recommendations. They will have given me the things that they are concerned about. And now it's up to me to decide what I'm going to do. And this is where the process goes from being people intensive to now you just feel like you're a hermit in a cave by yourself, all alone, isolated. I mean, all along the way, people have been involved. And they've got some interest to protect. And I'm smart enough to know that that impacts what they say. It impacts how they say it. They're always on guard, even if they don't mean to be. Smart, well-intentioned people, but it's just how things are. And at this point, I'm likely going to huddle alone, and I'm going to think about it some more. And if I'm really brave, I may reach out to a friend. I may reach out to some trusted person who's in the space. I may know somebody who's in commercial real estate, and I may reach out to them to get some perspective that would be specific to the issue at hand. And it might be a longtime business acquaintance, might be a close friend who deals in commercial real estate. I mean, it could be anybody that kind of leaps to the top of my mind. And when I'm done getting their input, I'm right back to being Mr. Lonely. I mean, what should I do? Sometimes there's a clock ticking. Sometimes there's a deadline that's looming large. And that pressure, it can mount and it can mount and it can make that decision even more dreadful. And if we delay too long, we might lose an opportunity. Well, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Well, how can you know? These good people, all these good people that we are surrounded by, my good people, they need something from us. Sure. they need us to make a decision and they need us to keep them involved, but they need something else from us. They need something that inadvertently gets in everybody's way. It's not intentional and it may not even be conscious. It just is. That real estate attorney has a client relationship with us. He needs us as a client. He wants us as a client. And it's a good thing because hopefully he is skilled and he's capable and he has our best interest, but he's driven to do a good job for me because he wants me to use him on the next deal and the next deal. But he can unwittingly handle my business because I'm a client. And he wants to please me. He wants to make me happy. And he's getting some sense of what I really want to make happen. And that might alter his strategy depending on how badly I want this deal or how badly he thinks I want this deal. And so as an owner, I'm not immune from having preferences. The fact is, I have preferences. You have preferences. And we make those preferences known every day, even if they're done in subtle ways. And my attorney, he's no different than everybody else around me. He wants to please me. He wants to protect me. My team, well, they're in an even deeper situation. Their jobs, their careers are hanging in the balance. And as part of my team, well, they want me to like them. They want me to think they're smart and capable, and they want more responsibility. They want more authority. They may want bigger, better jobs within the company. They know that that's the road to increased salaries and all that goes with it. Some of them, they're building resumes for even bigger jobs outside the scope and scale of our company, which is fine. They want to do remarkable work for me. You've got the same situation. Each of them is affected by this employee-employer relationship. It can't be helped. There's just no way around it. They're beholden to me. Your employees, they're beholden to you. They certainly don't want to get on your bad side. They don't want you to view them as being anything other than just highly valuable. And that can alter how they react to you. That can alter what they say to you. That can alter what they do, even if they don't think it does. I mean, coming to work side by side, day after day, they grow acclimated to this culture that you have created and to your preferences as the owner. Every employee, well, every employee that has any kind of EQ does. And even contrarians who might start out quite contrary, they grow more compliant over time. It's just how things go. And then there are the friends and the business acquaintances that I might reach out to. You've got friends and acquaintances like that. Maybe there's a social relationship. Maybe there's some kind of a semi-business relationship. Maybe there's a flat-out business relationship. Those people aren't likely going to push you in a direction other than the one that they sense you want to go. Unless they think that you're going to just really make a colossal mistake. And, you know, if you're going to make a colossal mistake, I don't think you're going to be reaching out to these people at that point, because other people would have piped up along the way. Now, as the owner, our toughest decisions don't normally involve a choice that is a colossal mistake. I commonly will ask business owners, when's the last time that you made a decision that was one of those bet the farm decisions? A decision that if you got it wrong, there's no possible way that you could fix it. Owners can't think of one. They just can't think of one. Because that's just not very typical of the decisions that we make. We rarely, if ever, make decisions that are cost the farm kinds of decisions. Now, I'm not minimizing the decisions that we make, saying that they're not important, but by and large, the problems that we face, we can fix them. Now, the example that I gave you with the lease, you could sign a long-term lease and you're on the hook. Real difficult to fix it. And that's why I picked that one. I picked that one because for me, some of those kinds of decisions have been the most impactful because they have long-term consequences. And once you sign, you're legally bound. And so I want to get that right. You want to get it right. Well, even smaller decisions, we want to get them right, of course. There is nobody else. Or is there? I never had anybody else. Do you? Armed with all these great people around me, involved in the process, And yet, as I look around, they all need something from me. They need a job. They need a client relationship. They need a social relationship. They need a business relationship. I mean, there's something. And I fostered dissenting opinions. Maybe you don't, but I do and always have. But that's difficult. That's difficult when people have spent any time with you, because it's only natural for us to communicate with people and to form opinions like the people that are around us, especially when somebody else is in charge. It truly is a case of nobody's able or willing to tell the emperor he has no clothes. And even emperors or owners who don't suffer severe bouts of vanity or arrogance will influence the people around them to be like-minded. It can't be helped. Mostly, I would tell you that that's not a bad thing. But it's not ideal for the very best decision-making. I was just a teenager when I first read Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. The internet had not yet been invented, and so I had never heard prior to reading that book of anything called a mastermind group. And it seemed like a terrific idea to me at the time, and I wasn't terribly interested in it, to be fair. I wasn't a business guy at the time. I was just a stereo sales guy, but I saw the power of it. It made sense to me. I had participated in small groups that were formed either by industry associations or industry-related people. And those were fairly enjoyable. I mean, it was great to sit around the room with other people in the same industry, and I enjoyed hearing what other people were doing about various industry-specific challenges or problems and swapping ideas and stories. Well, that seemed always to be worthwhile. It was worth the time that I invested. I recall when Honda Motor Cars arrived in America with that first itty-bitty car that had really small wheels and tires. I had a buddy who bought one, and it was a whole lot of fun. I mean, it was basically like riding around in an enclosed go-kart. But then the Honda Accord arrived. Well, that changed everything. It was an absolute game changer in the automotive world. And you could notice it right away. It wasn't this itty-bitty car. It took the world by storm, and everybody wanted one, and there was a waiting list, and I know because I tried to get one. And within just a few years, Detroit started making cars that looked exactly like the Honda Accord. And it dawned on me that this whole groupthink, and we didn't use that term back then, that term, somebody coined that term later on, that was very prevalent in every industry. Not just the one I was in, consumer electronics. I mean, it's why you didn't see a whole lot of innovation, because we would copy each other. We would attend the same conventions. We would read the same trade magazines. We attended the same trade and industry shows. We bought the same inventory, and we mostly did what everybody else was doing, more or less. And in time, we would make ourselves feel better about it by calling it best practices. People still do that today. I'm not sure it ever was the best, but it was what we all did. Now, fast forward to my time away from the C-suite these last 8 years or so, and I'm working with a client who is an elder law attorney. I'd never heard of elder law. This specific area of law aimed at serving seniors or the adult children of seniors who are tasked with protecting mom and dad's assets and seeing to mom and dad's needs as they grow older and older and older. It was a noble profession, and I had this epiphany. What if I could get a small group of elder law attorneys together virtually in a mastermind group? I'm not an attorney, but I could facilitate helping them grow their practice because I'm a business guy. They spent their life learning and honing their craft of being elder law attorneys. I've spent my life operating business. Well, they have businesses to operate. They don't think of themselves like business people. They think of themselves like attorneys. But they are business people. They have to be if they're going to be successful. And I thought, well, what if I could help them focus on that, and they could help one another focus on growing their elder law practice? Seemed like a great idea. Elder law attorneys are geographically specific. That is, they meet with their clients face-to-face. They don't do business in a virtual world. They sit down eyeball to eyeball with their clients, and they practice their craft where they are located. they're licensed in the state where they operate. And so getting a few of them together in an online technology, that just seemed to be, it seemed to be very congruent with my idea. Additionally, they're not competing with one another. So an elder law attorney here in Dallas, Texas, and an elder law attorney in St. Louis, they're not competitors because they're serving completely different geographies and they are licensed in completely different states. But I thought if I had one elder law attorney here in DFW and some scattered around from other states, then we might have something very powerful as they would help one another grow their practice and improve their business. And I even had what I thought was a great name for it, Elder Law Elite. Elder Law Elite. That was about 4 years ago. And sadly, I'm going to confess to you, it failed. I never launched it because as much as I would have great conversations with elder law attorneys, I could never crack the code because frankly, I don't think there's a code to be cracked. I found mostly that these were people who were focused on practicing their area of law, not on their practice. And it was understandable. It was just understandable. But it didn't alter my view of how valuable it would be to put a group of birds in the same nest together. And it's very trite, but we've all heard that African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I'd been a long fan of that moniker for team. Together, everybody achieves more. And I had used that. I've used that for years and years, especially in coaching kids in sports. It's completely true. It's completely true. Together, everybody does achieve more. And I still think Elder Law Elite was a great idea, but the target group, they couldn't see it. And if your target group can't see it, then you got nothing. You just got nothing. I was not terribly interested in pushing water up a hill, right? And that's exactly what it was. And so I abandoned the idea, but I didn't give up on the value of community and the value of a small group of people helping one another without any agenda other than to help each other grow their business and to grow their own leadership and to grow their lives. And I hearken back to my youth, well, my 20s, of thinking of all the loneliness and all of the problems that vexed small business owners. Now, I was really a little bit jealous, I don't mind telling you. Anytime I hear people talk about being in a mastermind group that delivered high value, I've always been envious because I've never experienced it. I've been invited to be in mastermind groups before, but they never gained any traction. Mostly, they were very tough to assemble, and many of the people obviously just wanted to be in one for free. And in my experience, they were worth exactly what I paid for them, nothing. And the people that tried to assemble these groups, they seemed mostly clueless about how to organize a group and even more clueless how to operate a group and make it worthwhile. But the pain of the small business owner, that just kept looming over me. And I kept thinking about this wellness revolution in physical terms and how badly I believe we need to have a wellness revolution in mental things and emotion, because small business is tough. Being a small business owner is tough. It's lonely. And it's isolating. And it seemed to me, as I was being fueled more and more and more and more, as I was listening to the pain in the voices of the small business owners that I was speaking with every week, and as I was hearing stories of loneliness and stories of defeat, it was not hard for me to measure it. I mean, I could call a business owner. I can call a business owner today. In fact, I can almost guarantee you that this will happen today. I will call some business owner that I've never talked to before. And I will get them on the phone, and at some point after the pleasantries and after I've explained why I'm calling, I'm going to ask, what's one problem that you wish somebody would solve and help you solve right now? And I can promise you that more often than not, here's the response I'm going to get. Those people that are a little bit snarky are going to say, do I just get one? And I'll say, yeah, you just get one. And then I'll just shut up and I will listen. And some will talk for 20 minutes. Some will talk for 45 minutes, and here I am. They've never met me before. This is the first time they're talking to me on the phone, and that fuels me. It fueled me, and it still fuels me week after week connecting with lonely business owners who just didn't have anybody to talk to and who never had anybody ask them that question or take the time to actually listen to their answer. Just somebody who acted like they cared and somebody who didn't judge them. Well, this is the driver behind all my work. To be that guy. To be that guy with whom top leaders can be transparent. It's a safe space. It's a safe space for what I value most, and that's candid conversation about the issues that confront small business owners. Small, intimate groups are often helpful. I lean towards small, intimate groups because that's how I roll. Because I'm naturally a bit of an introvert. And small is better for me. Smaller fuels me. Larger decreases my fuel. And so I like small. And I find an awful lot of other people kind of like small too. Not so small that you feel like you're always got the light shining on you, but also not so big that you just want to hug a wall and you want to hide. People dealing with their issues, small, intimate groups of people helping one another, people helping people grow as leaders, as business owners, owners helping owners overcome the challenges that might prevent them from being as successful as maybe they could be otherwise. People having some of their assumptions perhaps tested as they've never been tested before, because who's going to test them? I know as a business owner that we are accustomed to making decisions with only 70% information, often less, sometimes more. Most have little to no awareness of working with a coach. I didn't till I became one. Most of us don't have any idea about what it would be to rely on a group of peers. That is, people like us, people doing what we're doing, maybe not in our industry, but people who know what it is to have to make payroll, to have to hire people, to have to fire people, to have to sign leases. People like us, people that are operating businesses, to see the value in surrounding ourselves with people like that and the extraordinary value that that can bring. Now, it's not for everybody. Here's the great thing for me. It's not for everybody. And that's why it's such high value, because it's so remarkable and it is so extraordinary. And only the remarkable and the extraordinary are going to see the value. And here's the great thing, because as much as I've got some sales DNA, I'll tell you what I've learned through decades of selling. I don't sell. I just have a conversation. I'm not interested in selling. I'm interested in giving people the opportunity to buy. And if people don't want to buy, that's cool. Perfectly cool. So it's kind of a self-selecting kind of a deal. And I think that's great. I think that's good. It's kind of like explaining Evernote to somebody. Have you ever tried to explain Evernote to somebody? I mean, they either see it or they don't, right? And that's kind of how this goes. What's the bottom line to all this? The bottom line to this is your best decision-making tool, the best decision-making tool on the planet, is community. And I'm going to argue it's a community of peers who get what you get, who are floundering some cases, and in some cases maneuvering quite well, thank you, through the same kind of waters that you're navigating. I'm planning to launch the Bula Network Owners Alliance. It is the first group of just seven small business owners. Members can be located anywhere in America, because this is a virtual online group. Speed and convenience. Well, speed, convenience, and cost. These are the big high drivers for me. You interested in finding out more? Go to the website, growgreat.com. And you will see in the navigation, Bula Network Owners Alliance. Click that tab. Visit that page and let's have a brief phone conversation. No sales pitch, no pressure, just a conversation. Just meaningful conversation to decide if we are ideally suited for one another. And if this is a business opportunity, meaning a decision-making tool opportunity, that you care to take advantage of. My name is Randy Cantrell. Again, the website is growgreat.com. Coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.